Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. The recent Supreme Court rulings on same-sex marriage are being viewed as a big victory by gay rights advocates. The 5-4 decisions gutting the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, and effectively killing California's Proposition 8 ban on same-sex marriage allow federal benefits to married gay couples and deliver one more state to the ranks of those allowing couples of the same sex to marry. But the total of states who do allow it is only 13, along with the District of Columbia. Missouri and Illinois do not. So what now? With me in studio to talk about it is A.J. Bauckerman, Executive Director of PROMO, a Missouri statewide organization advocating for LGBT or lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender equality. Joining us by phone is civil rights attorney Denise Lieberman. She teaches a course in sexual orientation law at Washington University. She joins us from North Carolina. A little bit later in the program, we'll be talking with a same-sex married couple and with a local representative from SAGE, an organization that advocates for older members of the LGBT community. AJ, nice to have you with us. And Denise, thank you for joining us.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
You're in North Carolina, Denise, is that correct?
I am.
Okay, well, again.
Following other civil rights struggles.
Yes, well, many places do, and many places do, obviously. Let me get some reaction from each of you. I'll begin with you, AJ, to the Supreme Court decisions.
I think that on Thursday morning, after those decisions were put forth by the Supreme Court, that many LGBT people in this country woke up to a dramatically different landscape in front of them. I think that it's a sea change, and we're going to continue to see efforts ripple through the community.
Denise?
Absolutely. The Supreme Court's decision was an important and landmark ruling affirming the value and importance of the Equal Protection Clause, that the federal government cannot single out certain groups of people and treat them as second-class citizens. And that's, in essence, what the Supreme Court said that the Defense of Marriage Act did, that it was the federal government singling out certain types of marriages, certain types of people in marriages, for unequal and less respected treatment. And that was offensive to the Equal Protection Clause.
Denise, could one of these rulings be considered more important than the other?
Both rulings are important. Certainly the ruling in the Proposition 8 case left the question unanswered for now. So even though the impact of affirming the lower court's decision striking down Proposition 8 in California is important for the people of California, it left unanswered the ultimate question of whether or not states are going to be able to unequally regulate marriage among its citizens. And so in that sense, the Defense of Marriage Act ruling, I think, is more impactful because it affirmatively ruled that the federal government can't step in and make that decision for the, you know, overrule a state's decision to widely allow marriage and how it's going to allow marriage. And that's going to impact for couples living in those 13 states in the District of Columbia, their ability to access over 1,100 federal benefits that have real meaning in the day-to-day lives of couples across the country, right? Social Security benefits, survivor benefits, as in the case of Edie Windsor, the estate tax benefits, right? And already you're starting to see the effects of that in a number of areas, right? So we now know that this is going to affect immigration. Just yesterday, we got an important decision that now the federal government's not going to bar folks from being able to sponsor their spouse for immigration purposes. Right? You have the federal government saying we're going to now extend benefits to all same-sex couples. Right? You have now residents in long-term nursing care facilities or nursing homes will be able to get full visitation privileges. The military is extending benefits to spouses of service members, including the right to be buried at Arlington Cemetery, to access housing together. And those are important and very real kinds of benefits.
AJ, but, I'm sorry, Denise, go ahead.
No, but you know, they're only going to apply in those states that have decided to broadly define marriage to include all of their state's residents. And so what remains unclear from that decision is, what about the kids that don't do that? And because the Supreme Court did not address that question in the Proposition 8 case, that remains to be left for another day.
And, A.J., that is the rub, the fact that some 36 states or whatever that number one is at the present time still have yet to act and may not.
Correct. But now, part of the opportunity that's on the table going forward is the fact that we long for those opportunities to tell our stories. And I think what we're going to see over the next month, quarter, year is going to be a playing out of those stories and what it means. So, for example, while Denise is correct in indicating that there will be inequities between the states, the 13 states that have marriage, and a state like Missouri, we are going to see some things still be accessible to couples who are legally married from one of those 13 states who now reside in Missouri. So, for example, with the implementation of military benefits for spouses, Fort Leonard Wood or Scott Air Force Base are going to be prone to having those benefits. The immigration decision, the statement by Napolitano yesterday is to all couples legally married in the country. And the difference being for us is, and I'm not a lawyer, but it's a difference between place of domicile and place of celebration. Place of celebration is where you actually had your marriage performed. And that's going to come in to be critical when we look at different benefits like IRS or Social Security. By and large, IRS is going to be determined by place of domicile. Yet there could be some opportunity to have changes passed through legislation or perhaps additional rules extended from the federal branch, from the executive branch.
Right. Missouri is probably going to be a tougher nut to crack in that regard than most states, however. Wouldn't you agree? And then same question to Denise.
I am always a very hopeful person, and I do believe that Missouri does have the capacity to make that change. Our organization is we are committed to marriage equality in Missouri and seeing it through. We will probably take the next 30, 60, 90 days to determine what are the best paths forward. So, for example, right now, while we've been contacted and I know other legal entities have been contacted about wanting to file lawsuits to try to overturn the state constitutional ban, there are other lawsuits already filed in other states that are making it to circuit court. So, for example, one overlooked component of the Supreme Court, while DOMA got a lot of discussion in Prop 8 on Wednesday, on Thursday, the Supreme Court denied hearing a case out of Nevada that takes on the constitutional ban. That'll now go to the Ninth Circuit Court.
Denise, can the constitutional ban be overturned, or does that have to go back to a vote of the people?
Well, that's a good question. I think there's a lot of unanswered questions still at this point. Obviously, the constitutional ban in Missouri is written into our Constitution, and so it would either have to be overturned by a vote of the people or by the United States, by a finding by the U.S. Supreme Court that ban is inconsistent with the United States Constitution. That was a question the court could have taken up in the Proposition 8 case, but did not.
What about signals from the court? And that's dangerous territory, I know, Denise, to try to get into this game. But in the two rulings they issued last week, is there any sense that if and when this issue comes back in some form before the court, that it is likely to move in a more broader fashion?
Well, if there's any truth to the law, it's that you can't predict what the law is going to do. And you certainly it's not a good betting game to predict what the Supreme Court is going to do. But like AJ, I'm hopeful. I mean, we've seen six states adopt marriage equality since last fall. And you're starting to see communities across the country adopt broad anti-discrimination policies. Clearly, the direction that this country is moving is towards broader, full equality and legal recognition of equal rights for everyone.
And Don, I would actually add to that just one point about population. While we are talking about 13 states, that does represent roughly 30% of the population in the United States.
Pretty good chunk.
Yeah.
A pretty good chunk. Let's see. One other issue I wanted to bring up before we have to take our break concerns what's going on in Illinois. And Denise, I'll go to you for that. I think you're probably pretty much up to speed on it, as I'm sure AJ is. But they have a civil union law in Illinois. How is the civil union affected by what has happened this last week in Washington?
Well, I tell you, I think that's still a rather unknown question. You know, there's a number of states. Some states have domestic partnerships, recognize domestic partnerships or civil unions. And the big unknown after last week's ruling is what will the IRS consider as married for purposes of say, you know, tax returns, or what will the other agencies consider as married? Will they consider those who are engaged in civil unions to be married? It's very much unclear. What we, you know, all we know from last week's ruling is that, you know, with respect to states that actually affirm broad marriage rights, like New York, where the plaintiff Edie Windsor was from, right? She was legal. They were legally married. They were married in Canada. They lived in New York, a state that actually recognized her marriage as valid. And the Supreme Court said, well, the federal government can't negate that. What we don't know is how the IRS or other agencies will define that for the other states.
I actually thought we probably got a pretty good sense of that with President Obama stepping forward and praising the Supreme Court's action. I mean, he would have some sway in terms of what the IRS might do.
So one of the things that was immediate after the Supreme Court decision was a statement by Eric Holder that they will move thoughtfully and thoroughly to implement benefits for same-sex couples from those states. So I think we are going to continue to see, and that's part of the reason why I even indicated our own strategy will continue to evolve as we understand more from the federal components what will be extended to couples regardless of where they actually live.
I've had it suggested, Denise, someone said that the train is out of the station now and there is no turning back.
I think that's right. I think it's very clear that the train has left the station, that the majority of Americans support equal rights for all citizens. The majority of Americans support equal marriage rights for citizens. You know, states and communities are moving in that direction, and the courts are moving in that direction.
AJ, how do you explain this shift in public attitude? It's been very, very fast, very quick.
I think there are multiple factors involved, but I don't discount the very first thing in what I indicated previously. The more we tell our stories, the more people understand. And I think over the next few months, especially with the inequities, when you have the states that are the haves and a state like Missouri where we're have not, that people will see a stronger disconnect between what the American dream is for all people. And they believe in that American dream and that access to freedom and justice that should be present for everyone.
And Denise, I would think the younger population has some sway in this as well.
For sure. I mean, all the studies show that there's a significant generational gap on this issue, and that the vast majority of younger Americans support broad equal rights. But as long as we don't have full equal rights, we need to keep fighting in the states to get them in, and we need to keep fighting in places like Missouri and Illinois to ensure that all people are treated equally under the law. We need to fight to pass measures in Missouri that would protect citizens from being discriminated against in housing, employment, public accommodations. It's still legal to do that based on sexual orientation or gender identity in the state of Missouri.
That's Denise Lieberman, a civil rights attorney here in St. Louis and also teaches at Washington University a course on sexual orientation. With me in studio is A.J. Bockelman, executive director of PROMO, a gay rights advocacy group. We are talking about the fallout from last week's Supreme Court decisions on DOMA and Proposition 8. We're going to continue that conversation in just a moment. We'd like to bring you into it, too. Give us a couple of minutes because we have some more guests coming in. Our number, make a note, 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet as well at STL on air. Back with Denise and AJ in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. Joining us now by phone are two local men who married a year and a half ago in New York, Charlie Robin and Al Fisher. Al lost a position in a St. Louis Catholic school when he announced his intention to marry Charlie. Charlie is executive director of Washington University's Edison Theater. And Charlie and Al say hi to A.J. Bockelman and Denise Lieberman.
Hi, A.J. Hello. Hi, Denise Lieberman.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Let me ask you two gentlemen, it seems there's still an awful lot to sort out, even with those decisions last week. Tell us some of the things that you're looking at.
Well, we've been talking a lot about just what there are no answers right now. Like, can we file a joint tax return next year? It appears not, but no one can tell us definitely no. A lot of it depends on state law, so it's a lot of things need to just sort of get sorted out, and all these little details and questions get answered before we really know exactly what this means for us on a day-to-day level.
So you don't have a full feeling of what the impact is on you two?
No, we have a very good accountant that we're expecting will be researching all of this for us.
And we also have excellent people like A.J. Bockelman looking out for us in Jefferson City.
Give me some sense of what your reaction was, gentlemen, to what happened last week.
Hooping, hollering.
One at a time, please.
Go, Charlie.
Hooping and hollering. It was just so extraordinary to have all this happen right just before our Pride Fest here in St. Louis this past weekend. It added so much energy. It was at the same time that the men's chorus, for which Al's the artistic director, was having its Pride concert here at the Edison Theater. And it was just this wonderful avalanche of emotion and excitement with all the uncertainty that, well, but I'm in Missouri, and what does that mean? You know, and it certainly is a bittersweet. You know, it's like we see great potential, and we're thrilled by the momentum that is behind us. But it certainly is a stop-and-start process, and it's just a good thing that we're very patient people.
Well, patience is a virtue, as they say, but what about moving forward? Do you move forward in some way, or do you simply have to wait for events to propel you?
Well, at the moment, it is a bit of a wait-and-see, practically speaking, like our taxes next year. Do we file separately for another year? Or not really sure, so lots of questions to get answered by that. But definitely keep moving forward. Charlie and I both, I mean, being involved with the Gateway Men's Chorus, being involved in the organizations that we support, we never stop moving forward. There will always be farther that we can go. I don't think anybody from the 60s civil rights movement has clapped the dust off their hands and said, done, we did it. There's always more to do.
We've talked a little bit prior to your appearance on this program about Missouri and the fact that there is that constitutional amendment. It's going to be a little more difficult here, I think we're all agreed, than it might be in some other states.
Well, prohibition was a constitutional amendment, and that went away. Constitutional amendments can go away if you get support and you make it happen.
And I'm also a native St. Louis, and Al's a transplant, and thrilled that he's stuck around with me so long here. But, you know, I'm a native St. Louis, and I've always been proud of the very specific show-me state attitude, you know. But at the same time, I can't say that I haven't thought about what would it mean to move across the river to Illinois. I am oftentimes pursued for, because the level I'm at work and how high profile I can be at times in my industry, people send me job opportunities. And I have no interest in leaving St. Louis. I have no interest in leaving Missouri. But at the same time, when I look at more progressive states and how much more welcomed I would be and how much less expensive it would be in so many ways, even with the great property values and everything we have in St. Louis, there's so many of those 1,001 reasons why, you know, we are discriminated against as a same-sex couple.
I would say, actually, Al and Charlie, that that's probably one of the most common statements that I've heard from people over the last week, is that, especially in this region, it's very much anticipated that Illinois will have marriage within the next year, if not before the end of this year. And I've frequently heard people say, you know, I could easily do my job here in this region if I lived over in Illinois.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm sorry, what are you doing now?
I was fairly quickly fully employed. I am now the music teacher at City Academy, which is a private school run by Don Danforth. He's our president. It's on North Kings Highway, great school. I'm the artistic director of the Gateway Men's Chorus. I'm a piano player at Sheremeth Reform Congregation, and I'm also the piano player at Tyler Place Presbyterian Church. So no work for the Archdiocese of St. Louis, but plenty of work in other places.
Okay, well, we're going to let you go in just a minute. But before we do, a call has just come in that may be relevant to you gentlemen as well as the other guests. Let's bring in Rex calling from High Ridge. Rex,
hello.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
How are you?
Hi, go ahead.
I guess I'm a Neanderthal, but first of all, I don't understand why there's nobody from the other side there. I mean, you have a love fest going, and nobody's talking about how people come down on the other side. There's nobody on our side that thinks anybody's rights should be infringed on. I mean, I knew this is what the Supreme Court was going to do. The Constitution is clear, and I'm all for everybody having rights. But I know that the framers of the Constitution never entered their mind that there would be marriage between someone other than a man and a woman. And so I have to congratulate your side in that you've been so good at framing the conversation. You know, the word gay, you know, was different in our lexicon 25 years ago. You know, where did the word homophobic come from? How did we get, how come every television show, every movie gets screened by your side? Of course, the opinions have changed, especially the young, because they've been force-fed it for their whole life. Ellen DeGeneres has been shoved down our throat. She failed on one show after another, so she finally got it right, and she's very good at what she does. But it just gets crammed down our throat. You know, how can you not win? I mean, I'm sorry. You guys are great. You are very good at what you do. I obviously disagree with everything you stand for.
Rex, this is AJ. I greatly appreciate your perspective because there are a number of perspectives out there very much like that. But to speak just simply for myself, I grew up in a very Catholic household. I was almost the family priest. And I grew up in a Catholic faith that taught me that social justice was the strongest thing that you could do as a Catholic. And that the most powerful thing that you did was stand up for the person who has inequities in their life. And when I look at the LGBT experience across that spectrum, those inequities play out at a large scale. And I think that what we've seen is a cultural response to note those inequities and try to right those kinds of wrongs.
Do any of our guests want to chat with Rex? Denise?
I'd love to. You know, I've also grown up with it crammed down my throat that I'm less, that there's something wrong with me, and that what I do and how I do it and how I love, there's something immoral and improper, and like there's all kinds of labels that get put on me as an individual as I was growing up as a kid. But at the same time, I also grew up with a Catholic upbringing where I was with the resurrectionist priests, which were far more forward-thinking and were like the Jesuits in making certain that social justice was there and that you had a voice and you were allowed to speak out. As a God-created individual, I am valued, and that regardless of what was crammed down my throat all this time when I was growing up, I still found really positive images and people who are truly supportive. And I really applaud our constitutional creators who were aware enough in what they created to provide flexibility so that that which they could not imagine was still possible for those of us who come later. And thank goodness for the end of slavery, and thanks goodness for women's rights, and now thank goodness for the emergence of gay rights as well.
Denise, do you want to get in on it?
You know, the law cannot change people's hearts and minds, nor should it. That's not the place of the law. But the law is there to ensure that all people have equal access and equal opportunity. And a democracy doesn't work if the law treats some members of the community as less, or values them less, or doesn't afford them access to the same legal protections that everybody else gets. And that's simply what was affirmed at the Supreme Court, and that is a step in the right direction.
Well, I want to thank Charlie and Al for being with us. We have to move along. We have some other folks that will be joining us shortly. I want to thank you.
By the way.
I beg your pardon?
Thank you.
Yeah, Charlie Robin and Al Fisher, thanks so much for being with us. And we'll hope to hear from you in the not-too-distant future as things unfold. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
By the way, we asked our Twitter and Facebook followers to tell us what the Supreme Court's DOMA decision means to them in five words or less, DOMA or Proposition 8 for that matter, such things as affirm friends, humanity and dignity, one step closer, family protected, things like that. You can contact us through Twitter at STL on Air, also through Facebook. Our Facebook page is reachable through any page on Facebook. So, yeah, five words or less. Tell us what the Supreme Court decision means to you. I'm going to take another call now because I think Kristen in Imperial, Missouri, wants to follow up on what Rex had to say. Kristen, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to kind of touch on what your previous caller said. I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school. I was a Girl Scout. I received the highest religious award that a Girl Scout can receive. And me personally, as a child, I was always told things like, you love your neighbor as your brother. You remove the log from your own eye before trying to remove the log from someone else's. You know, you treat people how you want to be treated. And I personally am offended at the Catholic Church's reaction to this because I was always told and comforted by the fact that everybody should be allowed to love and to be themselves. And I just, what I was told as a child and what I'm hearing from them today do not match up.
All right. Thanks so much for the call, Kristen.
Thank you.
Any thoughts from any of our guests? If not, we will move along. You know, the weekend events here in St. Louis, AJ, were interesting from a number of standpoints. A full weekend, as has often been the case, but it moved downtown this year, which is something that hasn't happened before. There were a number of commitment ceremonies that were taking place. We were talking earlier about how education and advancing the agenda is taking place. This is a pretty good example of that, I would say.
Very much so. Moving downtown by many in the community was seen as the opportunity to say that we've arrived, that it wasn't really that long ago in our past that you actually had police raids on the local gay bars, you know, back in the mid-70s. Mm-hmm. I think even the early 80s you saw some of that. Yet on Sunday, you had both the Metropolitan Police Force and the county police walking, leading the Pride Parade. They were actually the first participants in the parade. That's a huge sea change.
Denise, any thoughts from you on that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a huge sea change. I remember 10 years ago this weekend being at Pride Fest, actually being up on the stage announcing the Supreme Court's ruling in Lawrence versus Texas, which ruled that states cannot criminalize consensual sexual activities between members of the same sex. And what a, you know, what a groundswell, what a land-breaking decision that was, that for the first time, members of the community were not purported criminals just for being who they were. And in 10 years' time, to see the growth of the movement, the expansion of rights to so many other areas of life, to allow people to be able to simply live the American dream. We're not there yet, and we're certainly not there in Missouri, but it's really incredible.
You know, in the earlier caller, Rex talked about taking sides, which I thought was an interesting way of putting it, breaking it down. There's us against them kind of thing. We have a call from Dave in Baldwin who wants to address that issue, so let's bring him in. Go ahead, Dave.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.
Sure, go ahead.
You know, it's really a very simple comment. I find it just totally disappointing that we have these conversations and they turn into debates. And it's in the context of talking about the subject inside, I still have failed to even grasp, and I consider myself a thoughtful and intelligent person, to grasp those who are against these people having the right to be together and to live a happy life. I have failed to be able to grasp a cogent argument against them having the freedom to do that. And I just wanted to state how disappointing it is that. And it's a reality of the debate that we're talking about it in the context aside, but it's so disappointing that we have to talk about it that way. And if Denise could help with this, I'd be grateful. Please help me understand what the position of those who are against these folks having the freedom to live their lives, what their position is based on, other than what I believe it might be. And anything you could, any way you could help me with that, Denise, I would be most grateful. Thank you.
That's a good question. You know, I think that, look, 40 years ago, we were having this exact same argument about states' ability to ban interracial marriage. And, you know, what were the states' arguments in favor of those laws then? Very similar to the ones that you're hearing now, that that somehow expanding equal rights and affording all people equal access to privileges, benefits, and responsibilities under the law somehow diminishes other people's ability to access those rights. I don't think that that's a cogent legal argument, and I don't think that it's one that will be able to prevail in the long run.
I do think that what we've seen is that social media and the advent of the ability to communicate quickly and efficiently with people has greatly impacted this entire argument. And Dave, to kind of talk briefly to what you're pointing out, I do believe that it goes back to the fact that any time we've seen a movement against an identity, be it based upon race, be it based upon gender, be it based upon whatever the stereotype is, the stereotype is written out at such an exaggerated level that slowly but surely those exaggerated stereotypes are just completely dismantled as you get to know people, as people come out. And in our case, you get to know your neighbor, your work colleague, your family members who have come out in this process. And those stereotypes no longer ring true, and you start to realize the person behind the issue.
You know, it's really no longer a question of just disagreeing one side versus the other side. There's a shroud of animosity, even hate, that permeates this whole discussion, which is very, very disquieting. You sense that, certainly.
Yes. I know that in my time down in Jefferson City at times, you know, I've been called lots of different things, whether it's in the hallways or even during hearings. And it is disquieting. It's frustrating. I've had letters that I have had to turn over to the FBI that were sent directly to my home. And so that certainly is disquieting at a certain level. But I'm resolved because I do believe, honestly, in my heart of hearts, that history is built on the inequities of the past, and that today we're bartering in those inequities, and that tomorrow is built on the tenets of hope, freedom, and justice.
Denise, did you have a thought on that?
That was well said, AJ.
I have to take another break now. Again, I want to encourage folks to reach us through Facebook and also via Twitter. We are interested in getting some comment from you in five words or less what the Supreme Court's DOMA decision and ruling on Proposition 8 means to you. A couple of them I have here already. It doesn't, but I'm happy, not in the least. Again, responding to the question what the Supreme Court's rulings last week mean to them. Back in just a moment, we have yet another guest. We'll pick up on that when we come back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation on the fallout from last week's Supreme Court decisions on DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, and also on Proposition 8, the ban on gay marriage. My guest in studio is A.J. Bockelman, Executive Director of PROMO, a civil rights advocacy group, a gay rights advocacy group, and Denise Lieberman, a civil rights attorney who teaches a sexual orientation course at Washington University. Basically, we're discussing what the fallout means for the gay community. We're bringing into the conversation now, we want to talk about the impact of those rulings I just mentioned on the older LGBT community in our area. Joining us now is Cheryl Wayland, Executive Director of SAGE, which is an organization that advocates for that group. Cheryl, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Don. Glad to be here today.
Give us a sense, Cheryl, if you would, of what last week's rulings by the Supreme Court mean to your organization and specifically the older members of that LGBT community.
You know, I think last week's ruling was definitely historical and monumental for our LGBT older adult community members. You know, Edie Windsor, who filed the DOMA lawsuit, she's 83 years old. And for so many of the LGBT older adults, they've experienced the exact same things that Edie experienced, you know, after the loss of her partner. We've had LGBT older adults call, you know, our office and share their stories about, you know, losing their house because they didn't qualify for some of the protections that a heterosexual married couple had qualified for, and that resulted in the loss of their house after their partner died, or being denied, you know, domestic partner benefits for health insurance. And so we have seniors that haven't been receiving adequate health care because they didn't qualify for their partner's health insurance plan. So it really had a big impact on our community. And DOMA being found unconstitutional really is something that I think so many of our LGBT older adults never thought they would experience within their lifetime. So we're very excited to see how this continues to play out and what benefits can really impact the lives of our LGBT seniors.
Before we continue, Cheryl, let me just bring Denise back into the conversation. What remains of DOMA, Denise? I mean, it wasn't tossed out. It was just certain parts of it were.
Right. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I got that. Right. The only part of DOMA that was at issue was Section 3, the section that barred the federal government from recognizing marriages in other states for purposes of federal benefits.
All right, just that one part. So, JJ, go ahead.
So Section 2 is actually still in place, and Section 2 is what essentially suspends the Full Faith and Credit Act and keeps a state like Missouri from recognizing a marriage from the state of Iowa. Mm-hmm.
Matters that have yet to be attended to, as we've talked about. Again, before I go back to Cheryl, I want to bring Jennifer into the conversation. I think Jennifer's comment here is relevant to what Cheryl and we are talking about. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Hi. I was just calling because I grew up in Wellington High School in the early 2000s, late 90s, and my dad is gay. And I remember him telling me that I wasn't supposed to tell just anybody that he was gay. I remember feeling, like, really bummed out for him about that because I don't think he understood that the ground was changing even then, you know. And to hear callers like your earliest one talk about things being shoved down their throat, it's really, like, hurt me deeply because I didn't have that shoved down my throat. It's just the reality of nature and life. And it's just nice to know that my dad is, like, being accepted now pretty freely. Like, I would not be reticent to tell anyone that he was gay at this point, you know.
Jennifer, thank you so much for the call. Cheryl, would you like to comment on that? I'll bet you that's something that you've heard before.
Yeah, I think, you know, so many of our LGBT older adults came of age at a time where they couldn't be out. And they were very fearful of, you know, losing their jobs, potentially losing their homes. And in a state like Missouri, they could still, you know, face some of those same consequences today because we don't have a non-discrimination act that's inclusive of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community. I think an interesting point, we have been completing a survey right now on housing and retirement needs of the LGBT community, and we asked the question what it would mean for our LGBT community to have DOMA overturned. And 39% of our respondents so far over the age of 50 responded that they felt like it would provide them with the opportunity to be more comfortable and to be more out than what they currently are. And we also found that only 15% actually have a legal same-sex marriage or civil union, but 47% feel like they are in a committed relationship or domestic partnership. So, you know, for us, it's really looking at, as we go forward, you know, how can a same-sex marriage law benefit our elders to help ensure that they can age, you know, with resources that keep them out of poverty, that prevent them from losing their homes, and really provide them with the economic benefits to age securely.
It sounds like the DOMA ruling is the more important for people who are part of your organization.
I think it really is. You know, Social Security is one thing that heterosexual, you know, couples qualify for as soon as they sign that marriage certificate. And we know that Social Security has kept seniors out of poverty ever since it was implemented. So, you know, having access to Social Security spousal benefits is huge
for the LGBT aging community.
I would add to that, Don, in that there's still something else at play. Because one of the bittersweet things about this past weekend was that you saw people coming out to Pride in St. Louis or Pride around the country, because this is the 44th anniversary of Stonewall, and that's what we celebrated during Pride weekend.
Explain Stonewall. Not everyone knows what you're talking about.
Stonewall riots are considered to be the beginning of the LGBT rights movement. And what was bittersweet about it is that you had individuals who did make the statement, you know, my partner and I have been married in another state, but I can't necessarily talk about it at work because I'm afraid I could be fired. Or through social media, I saw a number of posts where it was great to kind of be myself this weekend, but unfortunately I'm going back to work and I've got to go back into the closet. That was the sense that was there for some people. And that's still a reality here.
I'm going to bring Ed into our discussion because he wants to talk about Social Security, I think. And while Cheryl is still with us, it's a good time to do that. Go ahead, Ed.
I'm pretty liberal. I would believe in universal health care, but I do collect Social Security, and I keep hearing Social Security is running out of money, and now we're going to have people who weren't going to get Social Security. They will, and Social Security is going to run out of money faster, and we're concerned about budgets, and you can't increase this. And well, what is the cost of this? What does it cost additionally? Because people are going to get benefits that they used to not get.
Do Denise or AJ? Do you have any idea? Are there numbers that are associated with this?
I've not seen anything directly through Office of Administration to talk to specific costs. But Ed, a couple of factors that I would point out is that. While there's a lot of talk about insolvency of Social Security, it is projected to still have capacity through 2050 at current rates. The other factor is that while many of these couples are now eligible as a couple to receive benefits, what's on the table is that individually they likely still had access to Social Security. And this now just simply means that certain other provisions will be in place. So if, for example, the couple that we just had on, if they had a child together, if one of them dies before the age of 65, before the adolescent is out of the house at 18, there would be benefits to that family. And those are factors that I haven't seen estimates on, but it's not a significant increase to the general population.
Yeah, you have to point out that everybody who works contributes to Social Security. It's Denise or Cheryl, do you want to – go ahead.
Right, and so what this would allow then in the states that recognize marriage equality is, with respect to Social Security, would allow for the spousal benefits, survivor benefits, or death benefits, but, you know, wouldn't affect that initial outlay of paying into Social Security or the ability of someone to collect it later on.
Cheryl, anything to add?
Yeah, you know, I think AJ and Denise did a good job on the Social Security question, and I would just like to add that, you know, the biggest thing right now that I think same-sex couples in Missouri and Illinois who have been legally married in another state, what they do have access to is the estate tax protections, which heterosexual couples also have. And I think that is another big area that we need to start looking at with our older adults, so that they understand, you know, what the implications are for them going forward. And if they have a good tax attorney, I would encourage them to meet with that tax attorney and get advice on whether they should be looking at, you know, going ahead and getting married in Iowa or another state.
Cheryl, stay with us. We have a call, again, relevant to this part of the conversation, of which you are a big part. Jerry in O'Fallon, Missouri, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, good morning. I overall think this is a really good thing, but I was prompted to call by the previous caller. Someone brought up over the weekend at a discussion the same issue regarding the benefits to military spouses, et cetera, that it would cost more money. And I guess the question is, do we not do the right thing if it's more money? If it's only, I mean, if we're in such a bind, why not eliminate all spousal benefits? I mean, I just don't get the relevance of, if it's discrimination, it's discrimination, and we need to step up and do the right thing. Maybe that's too simplistic, but that's just how I feel about it. Thank you.
Jerry, thanks for the call. Cheryl, is that too simplistic?
You know, I would say you can't put a price on discrimination. And I think callers that are trying to say that it costs too much to afford the basic rights of committed LGBT couples, you know, have a losing argument.
Right. And look, these same arguments have been made with respect to advances in rights for every group that's been discriminated against in the past. They said, oh, it's going to cost more money to extend equal rights to racial minorities. It's going to cost us more money to extend equal rights to women. Those fall short. A democracy can't survive when members of the community and citizens are treated as second-class citizens.
I think we have time for a final call. Let's bring in Brant, calling from St. Louis. Brant, go ahead.
Don, you didn't answer the man's question when he asked you about balance, and instead you brought in a fifth guest. And I also wanted to mention that for the first time in my recollection of listening to NPR for many years, last Thursday there was an admission on All Things Considered that there was bias in the media concerning this issue. Thank you.
All right, Brant. Well, thank you for the call. I don't think bias is being suggested here. We're talking about the fallout in the gay community from two significant Supreme Court decisions last week. And I don't care what they said in All Things Considered. I don't necessarily go along with that at all. But, Brant, we thank you. Thank you for the call. Time is beginning to get away from us. I want to read an email that I received on Facebook this morning. It says that Reps wrote it and says, I'm guessing the Show Me State will be among the last to change to allow same-sex marriage. Clearly, this state is not in the forefront of change, and many residents, especially those in rural areas and small towns, are proud not to copy the trends on the coasts and the big cities. Denise, let me come back to you for just a response to that. That sounds fairly ominous for progress on this issue from your point of view.
Well, Missouri is certainly not leading the charge for equality on this issue, but we are making strides. And this year, legislation that would provide basic protections against discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations made its way further through the legislature than in any other year, getting through the Senate, had Republican co-sponsors. These are basic tenets of equality that the majority of Missourians, the majority of Americans feel should be entitled to everyone. It just offends their sense of fair play that people can still be discriminated against.
AJ, go ahead.
For the better part of our history in Missouri, we were considered a bellwether state. It's only in the last two elections that we didn't see things go for the victor in the presidential races. And so looking at Missouri as a bellwether, I still consider it a bellwether because I am seeing a change in attitudes and opinions around this issue. And especially whenever you separate civil relationship issues versus religious marriage. And I think we are seeing a sea change. Will we be the first? Certainly not. But I also don't believe we're going to be the last.
Cheryl, how about you? Are you seeing the kind of change that AJ was just talking about?
You know, I think we are seeing the change. And, you know, I just have to commend AJ and Promo for the work that they've done in taking the lead on this work in Missouri. We have to be able to reach across the aisles and continue to share our stories. And it's only by changing the hearts and minds that this work moves forward. And we are seeing that change.
And Denise, a final thought from you?
You know, I think that I would also want to commend the work of Promo and all the other activists who go week after week to the state capitol in Jefferson City to try and advocate for this change. There's plenty of work still to be done here in Missouri to provide basic protections from discrimination, from bullying in schools, from a whole variety of inequalities that our citizens experience in their day-to-day lives.
I'm going to give you the final word, Denise Lieberman. Thank you so much for being with us from North Carolina. Nice to have you with us today. A.J. Bachman, thank you so much for being with us. Good to talk to you again. I also want to thank Cheryl Whalen, Executive Director of SAGE, which advocates for older members of the LGBT community. Charlie Robin and Al Fisher were with us a little earlier in the program. I want to thank them as well for being with us today. More to come. A lot of work ahead. I know, A.J., with the work that you're doing, you have much yet to accomplish. Thank you so much. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Curtis Sittenfeld about her new novel, Sisterland, as well as her thoughts on living in St. Louis as a transplanted citizen. An op-ed in the New York Times on that recently got her a lot of attention. And in preparation for Independence Day, we'll hear historic interpreter Ann Williams' rendition of the Declaration of Independence. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.